listener-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 2nd of June, Anno Domini 2012, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, things to lose, nothing but views of stuff to confuse. That's what we're doing here today, and we'll start with the news.
That'll work.
Consumers looking for the latest in lightweight laptops will have a new option come July. The folks at Gigabyte have just announced the X11, a carbon fiber notebook that weighs only 971 grams, or, for those of us who grew up in the 60s, we know that's about 2.1 pounds. The company is touting the X11 as the lightest 11.6-inch notebook on Earth. That's a tough claim to confirm. Although the laptop is certainly lighter than other 11.6-inchers, including Apple's MacBook Air, Dell's Inspiron 11Z, Lenovo's IdeaPad S200, and even Samsung's Series 9. The carbon fiber gives the computer its lightweight, but also provides a certain durability, making it 6 times stronger than an aluminum laptop, according to Gigabyte. What about X11's other specs? The computer is driven by a third-generation Intel Core processor, also known as Ivy Bridge. With 4 gig of RAM and a 128 gig solid-state drive, the 11.6-inch LED backlit 16x9 screen offers a resolution of 1366 by 768 pixels. The integrated graphics comes courtesy of Intel's HD Graphics 4000. The X11 also sports a 1.3-megapixel camera, webcam, and an array of ports including USB 3.0 and 2.0, a micro SD card slot, a mini display port. The usual connections are part of the package, Ethernet, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. Prospective customers also have their choice of Windows 7 Home Premium or Windows 7 Professional, or wiping the whole thing out and putting a real operating system on it. What's the cost? Well, Gigabyte is pricing the X11 from about $1,000 to about $1,300, depending on the configuration. Well, $999 to $1,299. The notebook is expected to hit the market in July. Gigabyte, as a company, isn't exactly a household name like Apple or Dell. So what is Gigabyte? Launched in 1986, the Taiwan-based company may be familiar to PC hobbyists for its line of motherboards, but Gigabyte has since branched out to offer other products, including desktops, laptops, and tablets. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is what do you look for in a laptop? And the choices are lightweight, speed, great graphics, all-around power, baby, price, and I don't look for laptops. Now, so far, we have 29 votes. Price is number one with all-around power, baby, not far behind. Nobody looks for speed or great graphics in a laptop. Now, I know you will have more to say. So once you've taken the poll, check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you can then enter your opinion to the question, what's most important to you in a laptop? And then come back and join us as we discuss this and many other things. And of course, you can give us a call about this or about anything. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. I have been playing around with many different laptops over the years. Everything from Chromebooks to full-blown MacBook Airs and high-end Windows laptops. And I'll tell you what, depending on what I do, I personally, my eyes are not what they used to be, and so I like to have a bigger screen. What I carry right now is a netbook, which for many, many things I really love, but the screen is a little small for day-to-day work, you know? It's a a 10-inch screen and not a 10-inch screen. So it's essentially the size of the bigger tablets. An 11-inch screen is nice. 13-inch screen for me is better. I have a Chromebook that's got a 12-inch screen, and in many ways it's square, but in many ways it's quite ideal for what I do. You know, I'm not going to be doing a lot of video on it, but for surfing the web, for writing in Google Docs, for doing whatever, it's really pretty good.
Yep. A lot of people like that really small, really light computer to carry with them, and then when you get where you're going, you plug it into a bigger monitor.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And I should note, of course, because it's me and I have to.
Of course.
That's only 100 grams lighter than the MacBook Air.
Right.
Less than 4 ounces. You know, less than a hamburger. and it's the same price.
And less fat.
Yeah, less fat than a hamburger. Yeah.
But I think they're on to something with this carbon fiber business.
Yeah, carbon fiber is usually expensive, but it's becoming such a staple in so many industries now that the price is really coming down.
One of the interesting things. Hello, how are you? Apparently, I haven't had anything to drink in weeks, but apparently I'm drunk today. I can't talk today.
New mouth.
I wash my mouth. I can't do a thing with it. And you have no idea why I had to wash my mouth. But anyway,
the interesting thing
about carbon fiber is they're talking about, in fact, they're using it now. A couple of companies are using it in airplane bodies. One of the nice things about the carbon fiber is that it's about, as it says in the thing I just read, it's about 10 times stronger than aluminum, and it's also lighter. So it can be used, you save fuel. In addition, one of the problems with air travel in general is people get a kind of a sickness. They get dry throat and dry eyes and everything else. Well, there's two reasons for that. One is they keep the air pressure very low in an airplane so that it doesn't blow out the aluminum sides of the plane. And also, they keep it very, very dry so that helps cut down on the moisture on the skin, so there isn't a lot of corrosion. On the other hand, neither of those is a problem for carbon fiber.
Yep.
So making a plane out of carbon fiber means you can keep the air pressure higher and the air more humid, which is better for the passengers.
I saw a picture of a plane getting repaired, and they had taken the pressure dome out of the rear of the plane. It's basically, the pressure dome is a hemisphere the entire diameter of the fuselage.
Yep.
To help the pressure. But I found a really cool picture on Wikipedia, a strand of carbon fiber compared to a human hair.
Yeah, and it's much smaller. But it really is an amazing thing in terms of the properties of it. If it was sticky, you could probably use it for Spider-Man's web.
Geckos, they're working on gecko feet.
Yes,
the little tiny hairs on a gecko's foot that lets it climb, you know, sheer walls.
Yep.
So this Spider-Man deal might not be too far off.
That's exactly right.
And there's a bunch of people working on invisibility cloaks.
Yeah.
So the Harry Potter.
And transportation.
Teleportation. Yeah. Just saw another show on Discovery about that. About what they say about 50 out of every million photons they can teleport.
Yeah.
And they're up to like 100 feet.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah.
We live in amazing times. And, you know, we used to talk about the big difference between Star Trek and us, aside from the obvious magic of teleport and the transport, the transporters and the food processes.
Replicator, which is basically a transporter. You create food out of the pattern stored.
Yeah, yeah.
We have those now. We have 3D printers.
Now
you store a pattern in your computer and you do a 3D printer.
They can transport, they can teleport things 100 feet. So really all we're missing is the obvious, unbelievably good batteries they had.
Yeah.
Because there were no wires, and we seemingly can't get rid of that the way they did.
Yep. Well, as soon as we get the warp core to be able to generate unlimited energy, then we can broadcast that energy like Tesla was doing.
Well, that's what I've always wondered. Is it an actual a battery in there, or is it like Tesla, they're actually broadcasting power to everything?
Yeah.
I'd like to think it's the latter. I'd like to think that Tesla had a part in Star Trek. All right. Remember, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Betty did from Greece, New York. How are you, Betty? What's up?
Oh, I'm great today. I checked the Security Tangle site this morning.
Yes.
And there's a whole bunch of new programs.
Yep.
Could you do the rundown and explain what each of those does?
No, heck no.
Okay.
No, what the heck is wrong with you, Betty?
Yeah, call some computer show,
would you? For Pete's sake. I'd be happy to do that for you. Security Tango, never heard of it. All right. For those of you who actually don't know what the Security Tango is, I'll give you a quick rundown on that. For many years, we have talked about various things you need to do to keep your machine clean, and much of it is just repetitive. Here are the things you have to do. Here's the order you have to do them in. People would take forever to write them down. So I took to calling it the Security Tango because people would call up and say, I did what you told me and it didn't work. Did you do all the steps? No, I skipped step four. So I started saying, look, it's like a tango. If you skip a step, you're not dancing anymore. You're just stumbling around. So you have to do it all. Became the Security Tango. And then I thought, let's actually put it up on a website so that we can not have to keep saying, here's step one, here's step two, here's step three. And as time grew, the programs changed. And I added, it's not just for Windows. It used to be just for Windows, Security Tango for Windows. But now we have the Windows Waltz, the Linux Lambada, the Android Allemande, and, of course, the Mac Arena, for which I will not apologize. And it changes fairly regularly. Are you talking about the Windows version right now, Betty?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because that's the one that I've changed the most. Basically, there's a bunch of things you have to do and then a bunch of files that you should download. The three big ones that I've added are rkill, unhide, and TDSS killer. Basically, one of the problems that has occurred with the Tango, and in fact with anything that tries to fix malware on a running computer, is that malware is getting better at hiding. When you boot a machine and a rootkit is in the machine, it will actively defend itself because it's already running when you start the fixing programs. So the only real way to kill many of those is to take the hard drive out, make it the second drive in another machine, and not boot from it. Boot from the other drive in that machine and then clean the drive that's having the problem without running it. And that way, none of the programs that go at startup, none of the rootkits actually run. But there are a couple of programs. But the problem is a lot of people don't have that capability, right? I mean, how many people have an extra computer lying around that they can just throw that extra drive in? Not everybody. Yeah. Dave's got his hand up. I'm sure Chris Reich is saying me over in the IRC chat. But for most people, no. So, and particularly if you have a laptop, you may not have the ability to get that drive out, or if you do, to actually attach it to another machine. So, rkill is a program that tries to stop any running malware so that it can be removed. That's what it does. That's its entire purpose, is to stop any malware that might already be running. Unhide tries to reveal programs that are trying to conceal themselves so that if you don't know they're there, you won't remove them. And TDSS killer attacks some very specific rootkits that are out there. And then once you have run those, then you can run things like super anti-spyware, malware bytes, anti-malware, and then put your antivirus software like AVG or Avast or whatever in your firewall. But what those three new programs try to do is expose and stop any malware that may currently be running. Does that make sense?
Sure does.
So that's what that's for. And then
Those programs evolve over time as better programs come out and newer types of threats come out as well.
Right, right. And that's why it changes regularly. I always ask people to make sure that they are running the latest version of the Tango. Just go to the page and reboot it. And I ask people to run it twice because really the reality is that a lot of stuff doesn't get caught. The newer stuff, some of that doesn't get caught the first time. Often. So if you run it twice, I know it's a lot of work.
And you have to clean old stuff off sometimes before the new stuff can find it. And
Right.
So it's a little better than recommending you run it until it says you're clean, which may take several passes.
Yeah, right. But that's the main reason, and that's the order that I've put them in. I've talked to a lot of people whose opinions I actually respect online, who are well-known antivirus people, and they say the right order. There's a lot of discussion. We'll just call it discussion about the right order, but this seems to be the consensus. R-Kill, then Unhide, then TDSS Killer, then Stinger. And I know Stinger doesn't update very often, but you know what? A lot of old bad things are out there, and Stinger will kill them. Then Super Anti-Spyware, then Malware Bytes, and then whatever antivirus program you've got on. Does that make sense?
Sure does.
There you go.
One more quick question.
Yeah.
I noticed they run in...
Hold on, Betty. Stay on the line. We have to take a break.
Okay.
But we will come back, and so stay on the line, and we'll take the second question once we come back. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Betty from Greece, New York, and you. You know to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. It's 20 after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Sound Bites continues next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we've still got Betty on the line from Greece, New York. What was your second question, Betty?
Yeah, I noticed there's not, with these three new programs, there's not like an interface like Malware Bytes and Super Anti-Spyware.
Yeah, no.
So these are going to be something I should download every week?
Well, every time you run the Tango, yeah, you should always update everything.
Okay.
Right, and in terms of the others, they have an update button, and these things you would just have to re-download. The chances are good that they won't update very often, but you don't want to miss one if they do.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, that's one of the other problems.
Oops, wrong button.
What did I do?
You turned yourself
I turned
off.
My mic off. Yeah, that was very clever.
Oops.
I'm telling you, I don't know what... I went to my reunion last night.
What one?
Yeah, and...
More than 10?
College reunion, way more than 10.
More than 10,
40
less...
40 years.
More than 10, less than 50.
40 years I have been out of college. That's right, I graduated in 72. That's right. My wife did not want to go. My friend Trisha's husband didn't want to go, but she really needed arm candy, so I went with her. I was the first male graduate of Nazareth College, so that was, you know, I went and did that. It was a lot of fun. Saw some people I knew, met some people I didn't know. All I had to drink was water, but I am hungover today. I don't know why.
Because you're not used to...
It was that water that came out...
Being out and having fun? Yeah, that's exactly it.
It was the water that came out of the vodka bottle.
Well, that was vodka? It was clear. I assumed it was water.
Yeah.
Didn't it have a funny taste to it?
Not funny enough, apparently.
Okay.
It was a really nice time, but I'm kind of hungover.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Sorry, I was just finishing putting Betty's question in before I hit enter to save it.
They haven't put any photos online at the official Nazareth website yet.
No, although they were taking them last night.
See, I did that when I was in high school, I was a senior looking for colleges. I put in computers and 90% women. And Nazareth kept popping up.
Nazareth kept popping up. When I went to Nazareth, of course, we didn't do computers back then. It was I was a theater major. There were 8 men and 1,800 women on campus. God, I loved college.
You must have been tired.
I loved college. All right, let's go back to the news. Leap Wireless announced on Thursday morning that its Cricket prepaid wireless carrier will begin offering the first prepaid iPhone option in the U.S. on June 22nd. Although the devices will cost significantly more upfront than iPhones purchased on contract from another carrier, Cricket offers a $55 a month no contract plan, which includes, as they call it, unlimited calls, text, and data. I do not believe that word means what you think it means. Potential customers will be able to buy an 8-gigabyte iPhone 4 for $400 or a 16-gigabyte iPhone 4S for $500, a bit less than the no-contract phones offered by AT&T. But unlike AT&T, Cricket's monthly plan is prepaid, a benefit for those with less than stellar credit or those who don't want to be locked in for 2 years to a single carrier. Since Since Cricket's network is based on CDMA, however, you must buy an iPhone directly from them to use their service. It's possible that the iPhone 4S could be moved to a GSM-based network later using a SIM card, however. Some in the Twitterverse have already expressed disappointment that Cricket won't be offering an even cheaper prepaid iPhone in the form of the 3GS. Apple never produced a CDMA version of the iPhone 3GS, however, so such a product wouldn't make sense to create just for Cricket's prepaid market. Still, Cricket's $55 a month plan for the iPhone 4 and 4S is a pretty good deal, offering unlimited call and text. But Cricket's unlimited data isn't actually unlimited, of course. After you go through about 2.3 gigabytes, your data will be throttled. At the same time, 2.3 gigabytes is more than many customers will use in a month. AT&T has claimed in the past that only a small percentage use more than that in a month on its network. If you're these must be people who don't have apps that update, don't have...
Don't watch any video.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're the type to avoid streaming video and tons of audio, you'll probably be fine, although I've heard from heavy streaming media users, they often butt up against their data limits on AT&T. Cricket offers a form for those interested in iPhone to sign up and receive email alerts when June 22nd approaches, under the impression that these people do not have calendars. It's worth noting that there is another way to get a prepaid iPhone 4 or 4S, however. You can buy a prepaid AT&T-compatible micro SIM from Straight Talk, a mobile virtual network operator run by TracFone and Walmart, for just $15. That's right, a prepaid SIM card for $15. Straight Talk offers a $45 monthly plan that also includes unlimited calls, text, and data. And since Straight Talk runs over AT&T's network, you won't even need an unlocked iPhone. Just pop in the SIM, update your APN data settings, and you are good to go. So our question to you, would you buy a prepaid iPhone? Give us a call, assuming you can. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it's a huge mess in the cell phone industry, and it's becoming an issue in the land, you know, cable and DSL internet. You know, what does unlimited mean? An unlimited speed or unlimited bandwidth, unlimited downloading.
Right.
And a lot of places, fudge on what unlimited means. In fact, technically, Cricket is offering unlimited. They don't stop you from downloading anything.
They just make it really slow.
They make it really, really, really slow, yeah. And while the alternative has been for years that instead of throttling you or stopping your downloads, you get a huge overage bill.
Right.
So some of the other companies do that as well. So it's really tricky to keep an eye on what you're doing. And for most people, they don't realize how much a gigabyte is. That's 1 hour of high def video.
Right.
In a month.
Right.
For your data plan.
Right. So if you do a lot of YouTube or a lot of Netflix or whatever, you can go through your plan in a single movie.
And even on what would almost be considered simple web pages, a lot of them have little videos. So most of the ads you see these days are actually video.
Yep.
So you open a couple of ad-intensive web pages, and suddenly you're through your bandwidth.
Yep.
And you didn't do anything. It was the other end.
Right. I would be interested. I'll have to take a look at this because I didn't have a chance to. If the Straight Talk stuff is really unlimited, $45 a month doesn't sound bad, really.
So far, from what we've seen and what we've been reading, who is Dan Hesse? Sprint on their 4G network, it is unlimited download, unlimited speed, unlimited.
Fully unlimited for now,
but only on 4G and only for now. If your phone dips back to 3G, then there are limits.
Until they change, like everybody else has.
So many people aren't using 4G yet that that's probably why they can offer that, because it's not that congested. But then other people have showed that the congestion problem that the cell phone companies are trying to stop does not get fixed by throttling people.
Right.
If you have too many people using a cell phone, slowing them down isn't going to help.
That just means they're going to use it more.
Right.
Well, that's not really why they're doing it. They don't want you using their data.
Right. Well, they want you to pay more.
Right.
In fact, was it the chairman of AT&T would say that was the stupidest thing we ever did, to have an unlimited iPhone data plan.
Yep. Well, it's going to continue because, obviously, as I keep saying, the phone makers and the app makers all want us to use more and more and more data.
Yep.
You know, my phone this morning updated a dozen and a half apps, and then it updated the entire operating system. That had to give my data plan for the, well, month, and it's only 2 days in, yep, a heck of a hit, and I didn't even look to see what it would be, but it's ridiculous.
I've got 12 gigabytes on my Mac here since I rebooted it a couple of weeks ago. It's and it's frustrating that the cable companies and DSL companies are doing it too. Although Comcast just raised their limit to 350 gigs a month.
Yeah,
that used to be 250. But when Frontier and Time Warner tried to talk about it here in Rochester, they were talking about 5 gigabyte limits on the cable, and that's usually what you see as the limit on wireless. But you know, 5 gigs on cable, again, you know, that's one movie, maybe 2 movies a month. That's just ridiculous.
Well, and again, when you only have a couple of choices in a town, that's
yep,
what the deal is about. It becomes a kind of a monopoly. I mean, I had that argument with somebody that both of these are a monopoly in certain areas. Mm-hmm. You don't have another choice in those areas.
Well, like you've been pining for the longest time.
Files.
And
I want it.
Well, Time Warner now offers internet service that's as fast or faster than Fios.
Yeah, Fios's
big deal was internet over fiber, and the other companies have got internet over copper running almost as fast and if not faster. But the problem is, yeah, Time Warner is the only cable internet provider, but you can get DSL, you can get other companies. Earthlink still sells DSL. Ironically, they resell Frontier DSL and Time Warner Cable in right. Rochester, and you can go with the Dish Internet providers, and you can go with the wireless Internet providers. So from a governmental regulation aspect, there is competition, and there are multiple providers.
Right.
But from a consumer aspect,
most of those are not really viable.
You have a bunch of bad choices, and you have to pick the least evil of them.
Right, right.
Yeah. And, it, you know, like you say, it's reducing competition. The more folks you get in there providing that service.
And the problem with wired internet is the expense of running all those wires. So that's why the phone company and the cable company were allowed monopolies, is because it's a huge capital expense.
Right.
But now we're hearing people in outlying areas. In fact, we had a customer the other day that their house is 2,000 feet off the road. And they cannot get DSL or cable internet because they're too far from the road, and it would cost them tens of thousands of dollars to have a wire run up their road, up their driveway even. Mm-hmm. So they're stuck with satellite, which is expensive and slow compared to the other services.
Right.
Yeah, well, when I was at the old shop, they wanted to bring Roadrunner in, but they were going to have to dig this trench and all this, and they said, well, yeah, it's going to cost you this much. And I go, huh?
It was thousands, wasn't it,
to
get it in?
Like $4,000 because they had to bring a cable in and pull it in. And they said, so if you want it, you know, it's like this, you know, $4,000. No. I says, hell no. I mean, you got a lot of business. Well, you can all split it. Or if you folks want the service, bring it on in. Run a cable.
Yep.
And they didn't want to, but of course I was lucky. I had the fastest. I had the fastest internet service you could have with DSL, because it's always a distance issue. For folks that didn't know,
you were in the same building.
My wall was right next to
a wall.
Yeah,
yep.
I shared a wall. If it slowed down or went down, I could pound on the wall and yell over because I knew a number of the guys over there. I got to know them, you know, working on their computers and that. Pound on the wall. Hey, what's going on? Oh, sorry, we'll have you back up in a minute. because they were bringing in new equipment.
Yep,
and
yep, yep.
They took good care of me, and it was fast.
Yep. We had an issue at our old office where there was no internet service, and again, they were telling us $10,000 to trench it. We got all of the other companies in our buildings, the through the office buildings we used to be in, to say that they would subscribe also. And then so Time Warner ran the lines for free. And we got really mad because two kids showed up, 20-something kids showed up with a trenching tool. Mm-hmm. You were $10,000 to run this? And the wire they had to run was on the other side of the driveway.
Yeah.
So good contract work if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
But yep, there was probably a lot of back-end stuff, too.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was.
That's what I'm just telling myself.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's an interesting issue. And I don't know that it's going to be solved anytime soon. I do know that there are a lot of municipalities who wanted to put in their own Wi-Fi that's free for the entire community.
Right.
And they've been blocked at every turn legally by the monopolies.
Although in some areas it is. The town of Ontario has put public Wi-Fi down Main Street through Canandaigua, and they're supposed to be, not the town, the county of Ontario, they're supposed to be doing the entire county. And here in Monroe County partnered with Frontier to do Frontier Wireless, hotspots through most of downtown. But
yeah, they stopped just shy of me.
Yeah. You have to the
you
annoying thing
pay.
Is you, right, but and even more annoying than paying, you have to pay it an additional fee on top of your regular Frontier internet bill.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to buy Frontier internet for your house, and then you pay an additional fee to get the public Wi-Fi, not public Wi-Fi, the citywide Wi-Fi. But ironically, the Frontier citywide keeps getting listed on free internet sites because it is free for 5 minutes.
Right.
Which gives you enough time to log into your account.
Right. Right. And I do get it. Everybody needs to make money. I understand there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. But there's a difference between making money and making more money. And there comes a point where they could make a profit and not get crazed about it. But I guess not. So anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you've got plenty of time left to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And you would be talking to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and I have a news story that speaks directly to something Steve said earlier. On Wednesday, Verizon pledged to more than double the speeds of several Fios internet tiers, as well as introduce two near tiers into the mix. Verizon said its revamped Fios internet portfolio will include speed tiers that boast 50 up, 25 down. This is all megabits per second. 150 up, down rather. 50 down and 25 up. 150 down and 65 up. And the two new offerings will be 75 down and 35 up, or 300 down and 65 up. The 365 megabit per second tier is double that of Fios Internet's current top speed of 150 and 35, Verizon said. The provider's entry-level 15.5 tier will remain, while the 25.25 option will bump to 50.25, and the 35.35 selection will increase to 75.35.
Of course, that's only $200 a month.
Well, pricing will be announced next month. Verizon said users can sign up for standalone internet service or add these tiers to bundled packages. The move is intended to address the burgeoning growth of bandwidth-intensive applications and the increase in the number of internet-connected devices being used simultaneously in the same household. Basically, the era of unlimited broadband access at one speed is over. Broadband internet subscribers are no longer only using the web to check email and do the occasional Google search. They're now streaming Netflix video, accessing live cable TV on iPads, downloading HD movies from iTunes or Amazon, and Skyping for hours. Customers need more bandwidth to receive the highest quality experience, said Bob Mudge, president of Verizon's consumer and mass market business unit and patron saint of many of us. As recently as 2005, video was less than 10% of web traffic, said Mike Ritter, the chief marketing officer for Verizon's consumer and mass market business unit. By the end of this year, we expect it to be 50%, growing to 90% in just a few years. Verizon said the 15.5 tier is aimed at those who use the web for email and web browsing in a one- or two-person household. The 50-25 tier would be for those in a multi-person household with people who telecommute, download music and photos, view videos on the PC or wireless devices. That would be many of us. The 75-35 tier is for those who stream HD movies, particularly in participate in multiplayer gaming or have three or more people on internet-connected devices throughout the house. That's many of us. And the 150 and 300 tiers, both which are 65 megabits per second down, are geared toward homes with five or more heavy internet users or just me. Those two highest tiers will require the installation of a GPON, a gigabit passive optical network, but the 300 megabit per second tier will allow for the download of 1.5 gigabyte standard def movie in less than 40 seconds and a 5 gig high def film in 2.2 minutes. An entire 5 gigabyte high-def movie in 2.2 minutes. Nice. So our question to you, what would you pay for a 300 megabit per second down internet service? Give us a call.
Wait a minute.
585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I can remember a long time ago when we used to get onto the BBSs and you were going to download a file, you clicked on it and walked away from the computer for about a half hour because that's how long it was going to take. Just one file, and it was, you know, maybe only 300K.
Yeah, we used to download a 1 meg file and it took an hour. And then for a while you download it, you know, a 1 gig file and it takes an hour. So pretty soon, you know, we're going to be downloading a 10 gig file and it won't take an hour anymore.
That's right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jason. Where are you calling from, Jason?
Altoona, PA.
Altoona, PA. And how are things out there?
Actually warming up and slightly overcast, but sunny.
Well, that's good. And what can we do for you?
Well, actually, I finally got around to downloading Windows 8 Preview the other day. And I the other day, you had somebody call in who mentioned the Windows key with the M key would give you the old interface. So I figured, well, I'll give it a try and pray for the best.
How'd the prayers go?
Yeah, they weren't answered.
Thank you.
I figured once I did that, I'd be able to hit the Windows key and I'd get the Windows menu. No, that takes you back to the Metro interface.
Yes. Yes.
Surprise!
Yes, so, Microsoft is completely uninterested in you using the old Windows interface.
They know what's better for you. Don't you know that?
Yeah, and it's not the old Windows interface. It's the new old Windows interface.
Mm-hmm.
The old Windows interface they never want to see again.
This one?
What's wrong with the program manager?
Well, it's not the future. It's not shiny enough.
Well, if you add the Arrow theme over top of the program manager, it'd still be shiny.
Well, yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Jason. Oh, we're losing the line. Sorry, Jason. Yeah, you're right. That would be shinier, but it's not shiny enough for Windows. For Microsoft, they want you to use the Metro interface because eventually they are going to make the desktop and the laptop and the tablet and the phone all use exactly the same interface.
All right. Can I make one prediction? Hear me now, remember me later.
Yeah.
I'll say a few words. ME.
Mm-hmm.
Vista.
Mm-hmm.
Windows 8.
Windows 8, if they don't give you the option to go switch back to the old style Windows versus tablet, you're going to see Windows 10. Or Windows 9, rather.
Yep.
Windows 9.
Yep. The reality is that people want what they want, not what somebody else wants for them. Apple has faced that problem several times in the past. Mostly they just kind of roll over and let it happen. But Apple has been talking for a little while about a more iOS-like interface for...
They did that with Lion, and then Mountain Lion, there's going to be even more of that integration.
Yep.
And it makes sense from a usability standpoint that both OSs will work similarly, but I think it's too soon in the Microsoft arena to go to a complete tablet OS on
tablets
a traditional
not
desktop.
Really. Tablets,
yeah.
I was saying... And I said it a couple months ago. Tablets are going to take over, I think, maybe this fall. And Christmas, they might be a hot item. There's still a lot of people that are still using laptops and desktops. They have not made the switch to tablets. It's a great little tool. It's a tool.
Yep.
For my everyday computer, holding that and doing stuff, no.
Nope.
And that's where Microsoft is going to get themselves in trouble.
I completely agree. And I really think that we have a dichotomy going on that where it's the users against the designers. We're seeing that in the Linux world with GNOME 3. A lot of people really, really don't like it, including Linus Torvalds, who's the guy who created Linux to begin with. And so people, at least in the Linux world, you have options. You can go to KDE. You can go to LXDE. You can probably find GNOME 2 somewhere to install. But you have less of a choice in the Windows world and less of a choice in the Mac world. So we'll see what happens. People will grumble and complain and then eventually just start using it. You know, the reality is nobody likes change. And so everybody's prepared for grumbling and tends to ignore it. Even when the grumbling is justified, people will tend to ignore it. And a lady at RIT once said the smartest thing I've ever heard. We were talking about making a big change that would anger everybody, and she said, yeah, but it's only really going to be a problem for 4 years. Because at the end of that 4 years, we're not going to have anybody left who remembers the old way, so it won't matter anymore. So we have a bunch of people who don't like it year one, fewer who don't like it year two, fewer year three, way fewer year four, and then we're done. And you know what? That's very, very true. And Apple is going to look, or rather Microsoft is going to look at the same thing. The people who really hate it will just have to use it, get over yourself, and any new users, not that there are many new people to be using Windows, will just not know it was ever any different.
Our great friend over in Orchard Park,
yes,
says, 4 words from the cynic describing the Microsoft UI: changes, training, and certification dollars.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's very true. Microsoft will get certification and training dollars because people will want to be trained on that product.
But the thing that is, though, is I don't think... Well, their companies aren't going to go there. They'll stick with Windows 7 before going to 8.
A lot of them are sticking with XP still.
I know what.
Until you're forced to buy a new computer and you can't get the old OS.
We are still in, I don't care what the government says, we are still in a recession. Folks are worried about losing their jobs. Unemployment is still over 8%. To turn around and tell a company, oh, well, you got to update all your equipment and go to this new OS if you want to be this. They're going, hell no. And they're going to stick with, like you say, XP or Windows 7 at max. They're definitely not going to go to Windows 8 and then have to turn around, like you say, pay the additional license fees, certification, and just training everybody. Yeah. That is a boatload of money.
I'm hearing from a lot of people who are asking me about Linux now, companies who are asking me about Linux, because they've got to change to something. And they're saying, if I can save $500, $1,000 per unit, I still have to retrain everybody anyway, so that's a wash. If everything is really free on this unit, and I can upgrade it for free, and I can pick and choose what operating what front end I want and everything else, mm-hmm. Well, let's take a look. I'm hearing from a bunch of companies who are interested in doing that.
Apple used that in some of their marketing campaigns when Vista came out. This is how bad Vista is. Why don't you switch to the Mac?
Right. Right.
I did find a couple of programs, and I posted links on how to disable the Metro on Windows 8. They're tweaks to the registry, basically.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Just where you want people going around.
Yeah.
So who knows? And Microsoft could change the tweak in the next version.
And tell you what, folks, if you...
Hey, you guys still there?
Yeah, yep. Go ahead.
Okay. One quick addition, when you mentioned that about the disabling Metro, does that re-enable the start menu?
Yes. Okay, yeah, the one blog I found on ZDNet does both.
Okay. But having said that, I downloaded the consumer preview 3 days ago, went to get the install key when I realized I forgot to grab that, only to find out that they not only changed the key when they brought out the new released version preview, so people can see what it's supposed to be coming when it hits the market actually, if they want to get the free download from Microsoft.
Right. They had two problems. One is that the first preview had a few issues, and two was that the keys were apparently universal. They actually unlocked a lot more than they should have.
Cool.
So they've changed both the operating system and the keys. So I don't know if I haven't honestly had time to even play with it.
We've been playing with it, and
don't waste your time.
Yeah, really. I mean, I love to play and destroy things and see if I can get them to break in there. We tried doing that on Windows 8, but be honest with you, I just found it very cumbersome.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a tablet, and I'll keep my tablet software on the tablet, not sit there and force me to also use it on my desktop.
Yeah.
Yes. And this is where I say, remember me, hear me now, remember me later, ME, Vista, now Windows 8.
Right. And everybody has to realize, the desktop interface has been around for what, 30 years?
Or more.
And the reality is, it may not be great, but everybody understands it. And sometimes that's more important.
Yeah, switching
new
isn't
always better.
Yeah, they have to make it new to sell more copies, but it may not be better. Yeah, yeah. So, Nick, what's the difference between the consumer preview and the release preview?
I haven't downloaded the release, so I couldn't tell you.
I think it's just a later version.
I see them both listed on Microsoft's website, and I can't quite tell what the difference is either.
I don't know that there is a difference. Microsoft has seven versions of Windows 7, and the only major differences between them are things that they took out of the lower-end versions so that you would pay more for the higher-end versions. I'm sorry, did I say that out loud? I beg your pardon.
I didn't hear nothing, Nick.
Exactly.
Hey, if I can add one more thing and I'll let you go.
Yeah.
Talking about ways to save money, if you don't mind me making a shameless plug for Goodwill and Salvation Army, do you mind?
No.
If you check out their stores, I know they've got a new thing where they recycle all their computer-based stuff. But a lot of times, like USB cords and cell phone chargers make it through into the thing. I have an older flip phone. In fact, that's what I'm talking to you from now. And I hate the idea of having to spend $30 or $40 for a wall wart to get it from Verizon. So you go into Goodwill and you pick it up for 59 cents.
Nice idea.
USB cables for 79 cents or, God forbid, $1.29 for a 6-foot USB 2 cable.
Right, right. Great idea.
So,
all right, thanks. We got to take a break. Thank you, Jason. We are done for the first hour. We'll be back again, however, and you'll get a chance to confuse us even more with your questions. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Ported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Apple CEO Tim Cook said the company would increase secrecy of the products in its pipeline in a speech that occurred on the same day alleged designs of the iPhone 5 were leaked online. Speaking at the D10 All Things Digital Conference, Cook said we're going to double down on secrecy on products. In the meanwhile, online photos of what appears to be part of the next generation iPhone were published to 9to5 Mac. Could it be a coincidence that Cook gave a speech on the same day the photos were leaked? Absolutely. After all, it wouldn't be the first time we've seen an alleged parts of a future iPhone that turn out to be wildly off base when the real product arrives, and pretty much you can't give a speech that doesn't occur on the same day as a leak of something from Apple. It's just that the photos of the purported iPhone 5 casings obtained by 9to5 Mac match many of the tipped changes for the next generation Apple smartphone expected later this year. They show a greatly reduced dock connector at the bottom, a redesigned speaker grille, and the headphone jack relocated to the bottom left of the phone, which is a first for Apple phones. An additional opening between the camera lens and the LED flash can be observed, which 9to5 Mac speculates could be where the secondary microphone used for noise reduction since the iPhone 4 was moved in order to allow for better audio capture during voice recordings. More strikingly, the back of the pictured phone has a large metal plate that could be made of liquid metal, a material Apple purchased exclusive rights to and is already using for the SIM ejector tool. The antenna band seems to be molded into the metal back plates, and the top and bottom of the device still appear covered in glass, probably to allow for better signal reception. The original iPhone had a metal back, but subsequent iterations used plastic and then glass. We don't know at this point which way you can't hold the phone, but we'll find out. What about the bigger screen? Well, the photos don't reveal much about that if they actually depict an iPhone 5 prototype casing at all. It appears the parts have been the same width as the current iPhone 4S. But it's taller, which is in keeping with recent reports that Apple is looking to increase the phone's height in order to accommodate a 4-inch screen and 4G LTE connectivity along with a bigger battery. So can you, our question to you is, can you wait for the new iPhone, or are you just on pins and needles? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or of course, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. What do you think of these new rumors?
Well, one of the things I've said is that a lot of the rumors, you know, maybe even all the rumors, could be true, because Apple is a company that likes to prototype everything, to have physical prototypes. So they may have all of these, and then who knows which one is actually going to make it to market.
Right.
The big question on a bigger screen is how much bigger can the average person hold in their hand? And so I kind of like one of the rumors that says that the physical size of the iPhone isn't going to get any bigger. They're just going to cut down on the size of the bezel and put a bigger screen in that existing size. Because one of the nice things about the width of the iPhone now is that you can pick it up and use it in one hand with one thumb. You can dial with one thumb. You can reach both sides of the keyboard with one thumb while you're holding, you know, driving in the other hand.
Yeah, that's do not do that. Don't try this at home. Don't try it out on a road. Professional driver, closed course, do not attempt.
Yep. So if they make it much bigger, it almost looks too big. With the Galaxy Note with its 5-inch screen, looks really silly holding it up to your head. Although with a Bluetooth, you may just leave it in your pocket all the time.
Well, that's my argument about a 7-inch phone.
Yeah, and one of the other issues is Apple's put a lot of marketing into the Retina display branding, and if they make the screen bigger, then it's going to lower the resolution. If they go to a higher resolution screen, that's going to make the programming all the harder. We've already noticed that on the iPad, that right now there are 4 different resolution screens between the iPhone and the iPad, and companies that want to make a universal application and include low-res graphics for the older models and high-res graphics for the higher models need to have really big applications to have four sets of graphics in it. And if they add another fifth set of graphics, that would be even harder. But then on the other hand of that, there's some new resolution enhancement or resolution independent settings that seem to be in the iPad 3, because if you run an iPad 2 app that doesn't have the double resolution screen, it still fills the whole screen and looks okay. Whereas with the iPhone apps, because they're designed for the smaller resolution, you have to magnify them on the iPad. And Apple has some patents have come out from Patently Apple about resolution independent screens. We would like to have a big screen with high resolution. The way computer screens have typically gone now, when the screen gets bigger, the pixel size gets bigger, and when the resolution gets bigger, the text on screen actually gets smaller.
Right.
So some of these 11-inch and 12-inch tablets that are running, you know, 1920 by 1080 on 11 inches, the text on the screen is really, really tiny. It's you know, it's nice and sharp and crisp, but it's too small. And I see a lot of people with desktops, that will lower the resolution on screen to make everything bigger. There's better ways to do that. You can mm-hmm. you can make things bigger without changing the resolution, but that's the easiest way to do it.
Right.
So until we get resolution independent OSs, so you can have a 300 DPI screen and it doesn't care what the pixel dimensions are. So you can have, you know, mm-hmm. a really high resolution screen and still keep, you know, things bigger that you can see. It's one of the things I liked about Windows always had the percent magnifier.
Yep.
Well, it's not really the magnifier, but you can change all your icons to 120% of actual size.
Mm-hmm.
And
different features.
Right. Apple does the same thing. You can change your icon size. You can change your text size. But you can't change the size of the menus without lowering the resolution of the screen.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, matter of fact, Microsoft gives you a different way to even do the menuing.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you can change that around to the new style versus the old style.
Yep.
And again, that's where they're shooting themselves in the foot with Windows 8. They're not giving people options.
Yep.
And to go into the registry, that is so dangerous. I know Steve put a link up there. But
it's a program that does it for you,
okay.
Which is a little less dangerous, but it's still tweaking the registry.
Yeah. And
yeah, please note that we really do not recommend you tweak the registry.
I do not support it, nor will, you know, I recommend it. It's just a bad operating system. That should be right up front. Give me the option or, you know, some other button that I, when installing it or, you know, when I'm setting it up. Say I go and buy a brand new computer, I bring it home, set it up. And as I'm setting it up and it's doing the install to customize it for me, I'm given the option, do you want the new look or the old look of Windows 8? Old being, you know, the old standard start bar and everything else. And then give you a toggle. If you want to experiment, toggle back and forth. Or, you know, like a dual boot. Dual boot where you're given the option. Again, do you want old or new?
Yeah, with Macross 10 Lion that I'm running on my laptop now, there's a lot of screen settings that make it look like an iPad. Full screen mode was a big thing. Most normal people get confused when they have multiple windows open and they're all piled on top of each other.
No, so, who are these people who get that confused? People have been using these things for 15, 20, 30, 40 years.
Training classes all the time with people who don't realize that when they open their web browser, their email window is behind it.
No, what they don't realize is when you close a window, you don't close the program.
Right.
That's what they don't realize on a Mac.
So when you open your web browser, you've lost your email program, and so people will grab the window, and if they know they can move the window, they'll shove it off the side of the screen to get to the window behind it. Now they can't get to the window, they just shoved off the side of the screen. So what we see a lot of times is people will run one program and quit it, run another program and quit it. And so with the full screen app modes on the iPad and iPhone, you're pretty much are only running one program at a time, and then you switch between them as you want to.
Well, like on Firefox, I mean, I use that, and on an average, one friend of mine said, well, I saw that you were online, so you must have been using it, you know, doing this and that. What they don't understand is I can have, on an average, 20 to 25 tabs open along there. They go, well, do you really need that many? Yes, because when I'm doing stuff, and there's other ones that I don't use a lot, but they're there. So I can just quick go across and boom, click on it, and the page is right there.
Right.
So like on, say, Facebook, folks say, well, I saw that you were logged in. Why didn't you respond back to me? Yeah, my browser is open, and Facebook gets an indication that I'm on because the browser is open. But I'm not actively on that tab.
Some people don't understand people who are not on Facebook 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
They just don't get it. But that's one of the things I like about multiple desktops. And I also very much like the fact that you can do that in and the Mac now.
Yep.
Or actually have been able to do that. I really like that because I have my, my eyes aren't that great, so I like to have a lot of things full screen. But I can now have one desktop that has my mail on it, another desktop has my browser, another desktop has my terminal window, another desktop has my calendar. And I can just switch back and forth among those desktops with a keystroke, and I can get to exactly the one I want with Alt 2 or Alt 3 or whatever.
Do you have dual monitors?
Even with dual monitors, I can do that.
But do you?
I don't.
Oh, see,
I don't.
That's where I've got over on my other screen.
You don't have the option of multiple desktops. That's why.
Right. So, the dual screens just make my life so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
And pasting and doing stuff and doing up quotes or looking stuff up for folks. Because folks will say, to me, what, do you live on the computer? At times, yeah, I do, because, I'm doing research. That's the whole business, with us.
Yep.
Things change on a daily basis. You might do a quote, and all of a sudden they come back to you. You did this quote up for me a couple weeks ago. All right, well, let me check on the pricing, because pricing changes daily.
Yep.
And you can't say that, it's always going to be this. No. It could go up, could go down. So we're taking a gamble here. It might be save you a few bucks. But, it's just the way
it is. It's a real issue for a lot of people. You're absolutely right. One of the ways that Windows tried to alleviate it in the past was by having the button bar across the bottom. With the Mac, you get the dock with the little glowy arrow saying what's open.
It used to be a black dot that you could see easy. Now it's a white dot that you can barely see.
No, you can barely see it because you have 15,000 things on your dock. I have like 20, and I put it off on the left side.
On the left side, there's even fewer.
Is this the dock?
Yeah, the dock at the bottom. Yeah, yeah. That's your common program.
Well,
it's
okay.
Yeah.
I don't need 150 programs instantly available because I can always hit F whatever it is up there and see my whole list and pick it off of that if it's something I don't use regularly. So by having fewer on the dock, I can have bigger icons and see the glowy thing much better.
Well, then
I know what's running all the time.
Then you need to use Launchpad, which is Apple's new feature for having nice big icons like the iPad does. So you have nice big icons of all your icons.
Don't I get that from F whatever it is?
No.
No, it tells
this
you
this is
that.
All of the applications you have. The F3 is just the applications running.
No. One of those things up there shows me all the applications that I can run. Trust me, I do it every day. I just don't remember which one it is because it's just a...
That must be the Launchpad icon. I didn't know there was a key for that. I've got an older computer.
This is what I see.
Okay, yeah, that's the Launchpad.
Yeah, okay, it's the Launchpad. I use it all the time. And that lets me load things, and then when they appear on the dock, then I know they're running.
Yep.
So if you keep fewer things on the dock, you actually have a better indication of what's running than if you keep a lot of things on the dock.
Yep.
And that's why, and then it fits on the side, and since there's more screen real estate side to side, I lose less by putting the dock over on the side.
I keep my dock hidden until I need it.
I keep it hidden as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it makes more sense to use the indicators that are built in to know what's running where, and Linux does it a little differently. There is still GNOME 2. GNOME 3 does everything badly. That's just a given. On GNOME 2, there is a kind of a button bar like there is on Windows, but each window each of my desktops has a separate button bar. Now I can pull down a list. I never loaded it on this one, but I can put a list on the panel up top or bottom and take a look at all the things that are running very easily. And so that all works.
I'm running out of icons in my menu bar because I have so many icons up there too.
Yeah. Do folders.
It's good to have. Well, no, it's nice to have certain things available at your fingertips. So, for example, when you start playing music, I know I've got a 30-second out or a 60-second out, and I can just click a little button that starts a 30-second countdown. And that, you know, the faster I can get to that, the better off I'm going to be. It's nice to have some of those things available on the dock. And then there are a couple other things that are nice to have on the dock. But is that music you're playing now? Because I can't hear it. Thank you. I simply could not hear that. I could have been talking for the next 40 minutes. I still can't hear it. All right, I'll just turn up my mic. That music tells me that I have to hit the 30-second out button, and we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we have Roger from Irondequoit on the line. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Okay, I got a question and then a contribution. Question first. I had not a problem come up with Firefox this past week where all text I entered would enter backward.
Oh, cool.
So, for instance, if I were typing to the address bar, as soon as I typed a letter, the cursor would jump to the left of it and type the letter to the left.
That sounds like you got switched.
I Googled it, and it said possibility of the JavaScript running in the background, shut down my JavaScript, everything like that. Didn't help. And the only thing that helped was I uninstalled a Microsoft mouse, and
yeah,
it stopped doing it after that. But I can't see how that should have done it.
Well, what you've started is the BIDI support, and usually Control-Shift-X will fix that.
I tried that, and all it did was take the text entered into the address bar. Instead of going in on the left of the address bar, it would go in all the way over on the right, but it would still enter backward.
All right.
Yeah, it sounds like it accidentally turned on one of the right-to-left languages, you know, in Arabic or
right.
One of those other languages.
And this only happens in Firefox.
Only happened in Firefox, and once I uninstalled the Microsoft mouse and went to a Logitech cordless mouse, it stopped.
Interesting.
Weird conflict with
drivers. One other thing you can try is if you go to the address bar and type about:config without any spaces,
mm-hmm.
It'll bring up all the configuration options and a filter box. And if you type BIDI in the filter box, you'll find one called bidi.browser.ui. Set that to true, restart Firefox, and under view, you will now have a switch page direction and an edit switch text direction menu items, which should work along with the Control-Shift-X shortcut. But if none of those things worked, if Control-Shift-X didn't work for you anyway, then you're better off just having uninstalled the one mouse and use the other, I guess.
Okay.
How weird is that?
Yeah, I tried everything I could think of. I Googled it, and every solution that I found when I Googled it didn't work. But now let's move on to the good news. We're getting into the summer season for computer overheats, and I found a great little program for monitoring your computer. It's from Piriform, the same folks who make CCleaner, and it's called Specky, S-P-E-C-C-Y. And basically what it does is brings up a console, which gives you the information on your system along with your CPU, motherboard, graphics, and hard drive temperatures.
Nice.
Plus a whole lot of information. For instance, if you go to system information in Windows, it's kind of like asking someone, you know, well, what kind of computer do you have? And they say a black one.
Yeah, right.
Okay, that's how system information compares to the information Specky gives you if you go to any of your items.
Nice.
But I think it's a great item for, you know, with the heat we're getting this summer and just being able to monitor your system and saying, okay, it's getting too hot, time to either turn on the air or shut down.
Right. So this is from Piriform.
Right. It's called Specky, S-P-E-C-C-Y.
Right. Steve's got a link up for it now. And that's great information, Roger. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Nick.
Have fun.
Yep.
This is my favorite part, when we find out cool stuff from our callers. I love that.
Yep.
And Roger is absolutely right. It's that time of year when we've got an awful lot of heat coming in. Not this week, but last week, certainly the week before. So be very careful with your computer and the whole question of heat and how blocked your fans are and how dirty your filters are and all that other stuff. It might not be a bad time to clean out.
Yeah, we had one that it was so crammed with dirt and dust and everything else, it wound up popping the capacitors.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Actually, I wanted to make a comment earlier in the show. You guys were talking about the Security Tango, and I had a problem last week that drove me absolutely nuts because I have a new computer about a month old, and I was running the Tango, realized I didn't turn off System Restore.
Uh-huh.
And Stinger came up with two Trojan horses that it could not clean. And I was just about freaking out and kept running Stinger, and it wouldn't clean it. And then I realized I didn't turn off System Restore. Rebooted the system, turned off System Restore, rebooted the system in the safe mode, ran the whole process again, and poof, they were gone.
There you go. That's why it's a Tango.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword with System Restore, because it saved my butt quite a few times.
Well, there's nothing to say you can't turn it back on again once your system is clean.
Yeah, that's what I do now. I turn it back on and create a new, you know, restore, and I try to keep up by just deleting anything that's not recent in System Restore, and then when I do the Tango, I turn it off, run the Tango, turn it back on, because it's kind of scary.
Yep. No, I don't disagree with you at all.
Yeah. The other thing is I didn't realize how long it takes when you have three external hard drives running as backups. One terabyte hard drive and two 500 gigabyte hard drives. Quite a long process when you have that many hard drives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you have multiple user accounts, you have to run it in each user account.
Yeah, don't have that, just one user account.
Well, and particularly if those external drives are USB.
Yes.
Because USB is not fast.
Yes. I do want to upgrade to 3.0 because I have the ability on the new computer and just haven't had the money to update to a couple drives that are 3.0.
Right.
So, but it's nice to have that option now, so...
Yeah, at least that'll be better.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yep. That goes back to it's a Tango, and if you skip a step, you're just stumbling around. And that's why the Tango is in the order it's in, theoretically. Like I said, it won't kill everything anymore. It's a game of leapfrog, and even though I put in our kill and the others on hide it still doesn't necessarily kill everything, but it's certainly much better than it was, and I will keep improving it as time goes on.
It's just, like you say, trying to stay one step ahead of them, and that's virtually impossible.
And it's very unfortunate that you have to turn off your restores, because that's a useful Windows feature, but the bad guys keep picking up on all the good features and making them bad.
Yep, it's exactly right. And it is, it'll keep going on and on and on. I don't, you know, and as you can see, I've had three people this last week. Oh yeah, I love your show, but I don't worry about it because I'm running a Mac. Yeah, you're now part of the problem. The reality is that Macs can get viruses. Mm-hmm. And even if they don't get their own viruses, they could pass on Windows viruses. You should be a good net citizen. Macs are so powerful, you know that they're the most powerful things on this earth. So running antivirus shouldn't slow them down at all. So be a good net citizen.
Yeah.
And help out your fellow people, even if you believe, erroneously, that you can't get a virus anyway.
And there
because you could be passing it on to family members and they're getting infected in your zone. Well, I got a Mac. I don't get it. Like you say, they could be giving it to them.
That's right.
And there are several really good free antivirus programs.
Right.
In fact, the iAntivirus that we used to talk about from PC Tools, they got bought by Norton. It's still free.
For
but
now.
I don't know if I like that. But you got to add Sophos to the list because they have a nice free for home user antivirus.
Oh, nice.
I will email you a reminder.
Please. Sophos makes a nice product, so that would be a good idea. But you can't change their minds, you know? I said to the guy, no, there are viruses out for the Mac. No, there aren't. There's a couple that are just proof of concept, but they don't actually exist. Well, okay, two things. One, you're wrong. There are real viruses out there. And two, a proof of concept can't be a proof of concept if it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. And it depends on
unless you're Nikola Tesla.
Depends on how picky you want to get, too, the difference between a Trojan horse and a virus.
Right, and nobody, yeah. You know, 99.999% of viruses are Trojan horses nowadays anyway. So it's just the generic term for malware. It exists on all computers.
Which itself is a term for malicious software.
Right.
Because we computer people are lazy. We want to cut down the syllables.
It's all portmanteaus. Yep.
That was one of the things I read once about Unix. Most Unix commands are two characters.
Right.
Because if they were only one characters, there wouldn't be enough of them.
Yeah.
And we're so lazy, we needed at least two characters for a command.
Right. He's exactly right.
Hey, the combination is great.
Yep. 26 times 26.
Yeah.
It's exponentially greater. Yeah, but that's so yeah, if you're going to run any computer and it's Windows, it's Mac, it's Linux, it's Android, you need to have an antivirus program. Right now, at least, unless it's changed very recently, there isn't an antivirus for iOS because Apple has locked down the hooks that you would require to do that. That doesn't mean there can't be a virus on the system. It means there can't be an antivirus on the system.
There was some interesting blog postings flying around the internet in the last week or so. What's his name? Kaspersky. Posted a blog posting saying it's really terrible that Apple won't let us make an AV program. And then so most of the responses were, yeah, a guy that sells AV software is mad that he can't make an AV software.
Right. Well, the problem is, like I said, the problem is not that you can't make AV software. The problem is none of that prevents viruses.
Yeah.
And so you can get them, but you can't protect against them. So it's, like I keep saying, it's an interesting dichotomy, but what are you going to do? And it's been very clear that Apple figures, originally they were right about this. If it's going to go into the Apple Store, then we've already tested it and vetted it. But we've seen that slip up a number of times in various ways. So there's no reason it couldn't also slip up in terms of a virus.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you consider a virus? Well, we all say it's something malicious. Well, define malicious. There have been programs in the App Store that steal your data. Well, that's a virus from my definition because
yeah,
that's what
too.
Viruses do.
Yep.
And Apple happily and merrily let them through, but you have no protection against them because there is no antivirus to check to see what that program is doing in your system. So, I don't know. To me, I'm unhappy running something that I cannot protect.
Right.
I've been using Lookout on my iPad, and I keep getting notices that I'm connected to an insecure Wi-Fi. And part of me says, well, I know that because I connected to it. And part of me says, well, that's nice that you're warning me.
Yeah. Right. Well, if it's a constant neg, yeah, that would really tick me off. But if it's once a day, oh, okay.
Well, it depends on where you are. I mean, one of the things that I find at RIT is that I can open up my MacBook or my iPad, and within a minute, I'm looking at 50 networks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because so many Macs run an ad hoc network.
Yep.
In order to share whatever it is they're sharing. But if I'm not, if I'm malicious, I call that thing,
Free public Wi-Fi.
Free public Wi-Fi. and then other people connect to it, and I can steal all of the data that goes through there.
There was an interesting question. I read Lee Laporte's radio show. He said he had someone call in. One of their neighbors had a Wi-Fi network, and the SSI broadcast was profane and vulgar. You know, F my network or something like that.
Right.
And so the caller was asking, is there anything I can do about that? Because every time someone comes to my house to get on the internet, that profane network shows up in the list, and they think it's mine, or you know, they're offended by it. And the short answer is no, except ask your neighbor to change the name of his network. And apparently the caller did that, and the neighbor said, no, F no. So it's rough. Good fences make good neighbors, but when your neighbor's Wi-Fi network leaks across the fence into your house, what do you do about it?
Right. All right, back to the phones. Larry from Penfield. Hello, Larry. What's up?
Hi, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Lately, I've been having some intermittent internet problems where it will just go down sometimes, but sometimes it will spontaneously come back within a few minutes. Other times it doesn't. And I'm wondering if there's any way to narrow this down to whether it's the cable modem or my router or what it is.
Well, the easiest thing to do, are you wireless or wired?
Well, at the moment I'm wireless, but I could be wired if I needed to be.
The first thing to do is to plug it in. And actually, the first thing to do is plug it directly into your cable modem, bypassing your router altogether. Do that for a few days. If it doesn't drop out, you immediately know where the problem is. It's somewhere in that router. Now you go to the router and you plug into that wired. Same thing. Wait a couple of days. If you don't have a problem, you know the problem is wireless. So now the question becomes, why is it wireless? And that could be any one of a thousand things. But let's not borrow trouble until we, you know, let's not jump off that bridge till we have to.
Do you see, as we were mentioning earlier, do you see a lot of other wireless networks in your network list? And if so, you may need to change the channel you're on. Virtually every wireless network access point uses channel 6 as a default.
And you may be getting interference from other people's networks, particularly if you live in an apartment.
I don't live in an apartment, but I do have a number of neighbors. I probably have 6 or 8 different neighbors on my list.
Yeah. All right. Stay on the phone, Larry. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we've still got Larry from Penfield on the line. Are you there, Larry?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I would try first. Plug your computer directly into your router. Into your cable modem, bypassing your router.
What you'll probably have to do is restart your cable router to let it know about a different single device, because most cable routers, you can only plug one device at a time.
Right.
And while you're doing this, the rest of your computers won't be able to get to the internet because they're not going through your router.
Right.
Unless you have one of the newer cable routers that has a LAN router built into it. In fact, we're seeing that a lot with both cable and DSL. The cable router has LAN ports and Wi-Fi built into the cable router, and it's its own NAT router, so you may not need your own local network router, but most people like their own, us geeky people, right, like our own network router so we can control it.
Right.
So sounds like a good procedure. I do have one reservation about it, and that is it can go days before I have this problem.
Well, I know. I realize it's intermittent. I realize it's a problem. But, in fact, that's if you were to call up Time Warner, whoever your cable provider is, and ask them about it, they would tell you exactly the same thing, and they won't move forward until you've done that because that helps isolate the problem.
Right.
There's really no point in them replacing the cable modem if the problem is the router and vice versa.
Right.
Although sometimes what I've seen people do is you take your cable router physically into one of the cable stores and say, it's not working, give me a new one. And sometimes they just hand you over a new one pretty easily, but they have to record some notes about it. Sometimes they want you to do a technician on it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my next problem is I've got both my cable modem and my router in the basement, and I'm upstairs, and it's going to be a little awkward if I have to go down to the basement.
There's no shortcut for this, yeah. Larry. I'm afraid there really isn't.
And that may be part of the problem, that there's a lot of metal I-beams in basements. You've got heating ducts in basements, and all of that metal, you know, metal in a kitchen, you know, kitchen appliances can block radio signals. So you may be in a slightly different position in an office or a living room, and you're getting a slightly lower quality signal because it has to go through all that metal.
Right. Yeah, it is a little lower up here than other places.
Yep, and I've seen many places where, particularly if you're using a 2.5 gigahertz router, you'll find that turning on the microwave will completely kill your connection.
Or if you have portable phones in the house.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So a lot of the newer routers, especially the N routers, have a 5 gigahertz band. And if you switch up to that one, it often works a lot better than the 2.5 gigahertz band.
Oh, that's a good thing to know.
And that your laptop will do 5 gigahertz.
Right. Your devices have to do 5 gigahertz too. It might be worth stringing a single Ethernet wire from the basement cable router up into a common area to then put your wireless router in a more common spot in the house.
Mm. Well, there's lots of good ideas there to work on.
Well, there you go.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry. Good luck.
Oh.
Really, it's the intermittent problems that are worst, and of those, it really, to me, is the network problems that are even more the worst, because mm-hmm. It could be you, it could be somebody else's, it could be your computer, it could be the router, it could be the modem, it could be the line, it could be the something out on the pole.
It could be the neighbor downloading a giant torrent that day.
Exactly. So, well, don't laugh.
Yeah.
Cable modem is a shared medium, so... that's one of the reasons that I had trouble when I had it, because it was, you would find that many evenings, the kids in my neighborhood are downloading the latest whatever it is they're downloading, and my internet connectivity dropped severely.
Yeah. And it going back to maybe even the first step, is it the wireless kicking out, or is it the internet kicking out? And check your wireless signal strength when it's not working. And if you're still getting full signal strength, then the wireless is probably fine, and it's probably the internet connection. It still could be the wireless router's problem.
Right.
But it may not be the wireless network.
Right, right. And the first thing to check is this the only device it's happening to? Because it might, in fact, be the computer and nothing else. All right, our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Hi, fellas. A few weeks ago, a friend of mine called in and was talking about doing backups, and he caused me to think of a question that I need some help with. I have kind of a simplified homemade system where I back up onto thumb drives, and I do it weekly, and I rotate through two or three different drives themselves. And I have my computer organized so that the large amounts of data from Excel and Word are all organized into an annual file,
right,
that I can easily back up. But what occurred to me is you made mention of some information for addresses that are held in files that I wouldn't necessarily be alert to. Can you think of other files that I ought to be backing up other than my standard data files?
Generally, what we see is back up everything in your user folder or your home folder. That way, you get your pictures, you get your documents, you get your email, you get your address book. So if those are the things that you want backed up, and the email and the addresses are things that people often forget because they're in the application support folder on Windows or in the library on the Mac and not part of the documents folder.
Yeah, but some of the folders, it won't let you back up some of the system folders. You just grab the whole user.
Right, so you grab the user folder, and that gives you everything in your user.
Yeah, but they won't. What I'm saying, though, there's some protected files there that it won't allow you to back up.
Well, you can't back up an open file.
Right.
in
so,
most
yeah, you,
cases.
So you have to quit any of your open programs, including your email. Yeah.
Right. And in addition to that, there are many backup programs that won't see hidden files. So you have a problem there as well.
Definitely, though, your doc file is the key one there.
Right. But you're absolutely right, George. If you want to back up mail, then just before you do your backup, maybe you select all of your mail. This could be a lot. You select all of your mail, and you do an export to a file.
Now, Dick, can I ask a question? Nick, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Are you distinguishing between the mail itself and the email addresses? I'm least concerned about the mail as I am the addresses.
Yeah, well, they are separate structures and separate data folders, yes.
Right. So, again, you can export your address book.
Yeah, that's easy to do.
So if you export your address book every week before you do your backup, and you export that file into, say, your docs folder, then you should be good to go there.
Okay.
The other issue, I just lost it.
Oops. CRS.
And yeah. I'm the one who just went to the
Oh, yeah, no, mail program. I've seen people will back up their mail program thinking they're backing up their mail.
Right.
So there was a copy of Outlook on their backup drive.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't work. The data file is separate folders. It's not part of the application. So backing up application files doesn't buy you anything.
Okay. Now help me out. You said earlier the user folder, but I'm not recognizing the name user, but I looked down through
what version of Windows?
The user folder is whatever your username is.
Yeah, but wait a minute. What version of Windows?
XP.
Okay, right,
XP.
That's under Documents and Settings.
Okay,
and then it's your user
settings.
Folder. Yeah, under Windows Vista and later, it's in the users folder.
Okay.
Yep.
And the name of your user folder is your username, which is often your physical name, because that's how Windows sets it up when you type in your demographic name. But a lot of times, it's owner.
Mm-hmm.
And especially on the older OSs, your username is owner.
Okay. Good. This is helpful. Let me go to work on it.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thanks, George.
Bye.
Yeah, backup has also become a little more difficult than we would like. It's true of all of these things, and almost nothing really completely automates it. You know, we've talked a lot about using online backup. We've talked a lot about using off-site backup. But all of them require you to do the configuration. And if you don't know where these things are, or that you have to find out where these things are, I mean, if you don't even know to do that, then you're definitely not going to manage to get all the things you need backed up. And that's a real problem.
Yeah.
And they're different from operating system to operating system, and they're different from version to version of operating system.
We had a guy that thought he was backing up his Quicken data for years.
Yep.
And he had dozens and dozens of CDs and floppies back before that, and it turned out he was backing up the Quicken program.
Yep.
And never got his data.
Yep. And yet there's a command in Quicken to do backup.
Right. And the preferences, you can set a preference that says remind me every X times. Well, I just set that to say just back up. Don't bother reminding me. Just do the backup.
Yep.
But you have to remember what folder you're backing up to so right. you can do an offline backup of that folder.
Right. All right. That music tells me that you have wasted 2 more hours of your life listening to us. I don't know what is wrong with you, but whatever it is, we can't diagnose it now because we are out of time. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank all those of you who were listening today. I want to thank the heavens above for everything. And I want to thank Dave and Steve for whatever it is they did today. I want to thank me because I showed up, even though I was clearly severely hungover from too much water last night. But that's it for another week. We'll be back. Thank heaven, as I was clearly running out of people to thank. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we want to thank you for listening to us on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.